Welcome to All About Art. My name is Alexandra, and I'm an art historian, curator, and writer. Within this podcast, topics relating to art history, cultural policy, the art sector, as well as a large range of other art-related topics will be covered. Conducting critical discussions, having entertaining exchanges, or just enjoying some relaxing chats? All About Art is where you'll find it all. Join me in exploring and developing cultural discourse. Before I dive in, I wanted to let you lovely listeners know that All About Art is on Patreon. So if you want some behind the scenes content, maybe a bit of merch, the chance to get one-on-ones with me and my guests, or you're simply wanting to support this project, I would be absolutely thrilled if you decided to sign up. You can do so through the link in the show notes. I also wanted to say thank you to those who have already signed up. Your support means the world, and it makes the further production, improvement, and growth of the podcast possible. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. I have missed doing solo episodes, so I'm really excited to sit down with my microphone today and record this. I don't actually know what I'll call this episode yet, but it's basically a question and answer session on the topic of working in the arts. I collected your questions via my Instagram stories, and throughout this episode, I answer the questions of education, what should I study, what are good practices for art collectors, what are some red flags to look out for, how do you prepare for a job interview, and so much more. Thank you so much for your questions, and if you like this format, please do let me know, as I'm happy to do this more often and answer more of your questions. And now, on to the first one. The question is, what should I study and should I do a master's? I am definitely of the opinion that a master's is beneficial, not only because recruiters look for that level of education on your CV and it will be a good thing when looking to climb the ladder later on, but also because, at least from my own personal experience, the education I got from my master's has been instrumental in how I approach things professionally. My research I conducted during my studies has ended up defining my projects and talks that I give. For those who may not know, I studied art history at University College London for my bachelor's, which was a 3-year degree, and then I did my master's straight after in a 1-year course at Goldsmiths, studying arts administration and cultural policy. What I did in my master's was so practically useful. For example, I had to write a whole entire business plan for an arts organization, which at the time I absolutely hated, but afterwards I was incredibly grateful for the experience because I got to do that with the assistance of my professors and members of the board of that organization. I also got taught what it means to be a freelancer or entrepreneur in the arts, including what sort of paperwork and admin you have to do that surrounds it. This has been so useful in not only the subject matter I talk about on the podcast, but also practically. For example, I had to put together an event proposal for something that I'm trying to put on in the next few months. My master's armed me with the information that I would not have had otherwise. And that, plus advice I had from a mentor, basically allowed me to go from clueless to securing sponsorships, a venue, and funding. So I fully recommend continuing your education if you can. I also understand that being able to stay in education longer requires a certain amount of privilege. And although I really do believe education should be free, or at least not cost 10 grand a year, that's just not the reality here in the UK. I feel like Austria is an amazing place in that regard, but in the arts, I personally felt like coming to London would give me a more extensive and international experience in the sector, and I think that that has indeed been the case. Moving on to the next question, what are good practices of art collectors? The answer to this can vary depending on what level you're buying at. For very high-value works, one thing that I would say is a definite no-go in the arts is flipping. It means buying a work and quickly reselling it, hopefully at a profit. The reason why it's not great is because it's speculative and has great potential to hurt an artist's career. There is a great article on Artsy that sums it up really well, including real examples from the art market, as well as opinions from various art world professionals. I will put it in the show notes for anyone who wants to know a little bit more about that. In episode 26 of All About Art, which was the March art news analysis of 2022 and nearly 20 episodes ago, I spoke about an article in the art newspaper written by Melanie Gerlis. At the time, a group of around 50 collectors came together to create a code of conduct for collecting contemporary art, and they launched it in February 2022. Within this code, they encourage ideals such as conserving and documenting art, keeping it for the long term, and making pieces available for public exhibition. It was intended to serve as a helpful guide to explain what turns a quote-unquote buyer into a quote-unquote collector, and contained a call to action. I'm quoting now, "We aim to move away from collecting being a secretive activity, pure buying power, a vehicle to social status, or a capricious and at times abusive private passion." As I had said already in episode 26, but will reiterate here, Gerlis, who is a well-known art market columnist, states that she doesn't fully agree with the recommendations provided by this code of conduct. They go so far as to suggest that collectors should be holding dealers accountable to pay artists promptly, which she argues is not a responsibility that should fall onto collectors, which I agree with. This code of conduct also suggests an ethical collector must, quote, "show, frame, store, catalog, preserve, and where applicable, restore the artworks in the best possible conditions to assure their integrity and longevity." All of that costs money, effort, and time. And some of these things are what galleries do. And why would collectors be required to do this as well? Gerlis makes the valid point that art collecting is not a profession. In episode 26, I go into further depth of what bad practices look like according to this code of conduct, what Gerlis has to say about these things in her article, and what my opinion is on all of it. In any case, I have linked both the episode as well as the articles I used as resources in the show notes. Moving on to the next question, how do you prepare for an interview, and what are the most common questions you are asked? I'm guessing this is referring to a job interview. I think that it depends on what level you're applying for. In my experience, for internships, it's important to show that you're eager to learn and you don't mind getting your hands dirty. One of the biggest things that is looked for, in my opinion, is initiative. I find it amazing when I'm working with someone and they're thinking about their work in a way that prompts them to ask questions and be curious. That way, whoever is working with that person can teach them as much as they can, and the intern is getting the most out of their work experience. I also think that before going into any interview at any level, doing your research and knowing the organization beforehand is a definite plus, and that will be really, really useful to you in the moment. For an entry to mid-level role, as was with applying for internships, showing initiative is important, but this is where your experience comes in as well. Questions I have been asked relate to how comfortable I feel conducting certain tasks, how much experience I have doing certain things, and some job interviews also involve you writing an essay to show your skills in that area. The combination of honesty and confidence is very important too. In one job interview, I was asked if I had knowledge in something, and instead of floundering or trying to mold my experiences and knowledge to somehow form a yes to that question, I was honest. I said, actually, I don't have experience in that part of the role, but that is where I'm looking to grow my expertise and learn, which is what makes this role so interesting to me. Not only was I honest and confident about it, but I also made it clear that I was fully prepared to add professional tools to my toolbox in order to be able to conduct the task to the best of my ability, which goes back to showing initiative. Just to let you guys know, I did indeed get that job in the end. For a senior role, sorry, but I have not reached that point yet, so I have absolutely no advice to give you. I think this is where it becomes very, very specific in terms of the job that you're applying for as well. In any case, just to sum up, knowing the organization and doing your research beforehand is a must. What artists do you need to have in mind? How does your experience fit into the role? But how can your experience also be useful laterally? Always have one or two questions handy, and remember that honesty and confidence are your best assets in an interview. Continuing on, we have a question about red flags. What are they, how to avoid them, and how to deal with them? I think that this is a tough question, but I will answer in two different ways, and from the viewpoint of, number one, an art historian who does things like freelance work, and number two, as someone who has a full-time job in a gallery. So first off, red flags in a person professionally. The first thing that comes to mind is when someone never keeps to meetings, constantly reschedules, or is always late. This shows disorganization, and I don't feel like I can rely on them. Now, if this happens once or twice, I get it. We're all busy. But if this is a consistent thing, either they're unprofessional in general, or they don't give a shit about your time. And either way, that's red flags a-waving. The second thing is when it comes to money. If they are not transparent about financial compensation, or if they act offended or odd when payment is brought up, then that's a red flag. I'm not saying that doing unpaid work, if someone asks you to do unpaid work, that that's the worst thing in the world. I have done so much unpaid work in my time, and so much of it has been amazing and worth it, and I have built long-lasting and deep professional relationships with the people that I have worked with. I'm just referring to, if you do ask the question, that there's a lot of tiptoeing around it and no direct talk. Also, this may be very specific, but if you were collaborating with someone on an unpaid basis, and then the circumstances improve to where payment is involved, this shouldn't be used as a tactic to apply more pressure. Unless you have discussed further tasks or responsibilities, paying someone fairly for the work that they do does not give you the right to more of their time or services. Next red flag is if they gossip about everyone they have worked with in the past or have had issues with the majority of their collaborators. Chances are they will do so with you too. Red flag. And finally, this is just a personal pet peeve and not really a red flag, and it may surprise a lot of you coming from a podcaster, but the use of voice messages. Hear me out. I am all for voice messages in certain instances. My best friend sends me mini podcasts after her dates, and I love getting life updates from my buddies in that format. But I personally find it disrespectful to send a voice message to someone you're collaborating with when it's filled with important information. The reason why I find it disrespectful is because the receiver of the voice note will have to sit down, even possibly go so far as take notes on your message to try and formulate a coherent plan of action for you both and remember the important points that you talked about because you didn't want to put in the effort to pull together a cohesive written summary of your points because that takes a little bit more work. As I said with some of the previous points, if this happens once or twice, fine. But if this is the main way of communicating, I really, really dislike it. Now moving on to the second part from the point of view as someone who works within a gallery. Red flags in organizations. The first thing is their reputation. You have heard that working in this mega gallery is like being in Devil Wears Prada but without the fashion closet. Well, maybe you shouldn't take the job there then, because that's a whopping red flag. In relation to reputation as well, I have to say that the art world is pretty small in the grand scheme of things. And if I can say that about London, where I'm based, I'm pretty sure it's even smaller in other cities. If there is something wrong with a place, people will talk about it. So I suggest asking around. I will admit that I did do that with my current job, and I heard great things about the person I was going to work for, which in this specific case was a massive green flag. So there's the flip side of that coin. Another red flag is if a company has a high staff turnover, with people leaving after a few months or just kind of any time under a year, really. The next one goes against what I just said in a way, because if the higher ups have been in the same position for over a decade, then there may also be little room for growth, which unfortunately is still a massive issue in the arts at the moment, especially in non-commercial organizations. So before deciding on taking a job there or interviewing with an organization, I would suggest taking a look at that and almost having a Goldilocks approach. One's too hot, one's too cold, right in the middle is just right. But if you have any concerns regarding that, I definitely think that that is a question that you can bring up in an interview. The next question that was asked is how to get your work into a gallery. I think that this is dependent on your work and what sort of gallery you want to get your work into. One of the biggest pieces of advice I would give is to make sure that the gallery and their ethos, as well as their roster of artists, reflects you and your work too. I hosted a panel talk in November last year at Studio West Gallery here in London, and the gallerists that were on the panel gave amazing and straightforward advice. So once that recording gets published online, I suggest watching it. I will link their social media in the show notes. Going off of that point, I think that going to gallery events, making connections, speaking to artists that work with the gallery as well as the gallerists themselves are all great things that you can do when looking to show your work. Again, it depends on the scale of the gallery and things like that, but it's worth a shot. I also suggest inviting people from galleries you think do amazing work to your studio to see what you're working on and for you to tell them more about you and your practice. The next question I'm going to answer is how to find out about what strategic decision to take in your career in the art world. This is such a difficult question to answer without knowing any specifics or having any context, so I will answer in a bit of a general way. I wish I could be the one to sit here and tell you to just go with your gut, but if you're like me, you have no idea what the hell your gut is saying half of the time because you're thinking about all of the what-ifs. Ultimately, though, when thinking about making certain decisions and what the potential further implications of those decisions are, does that get you excited? Because if it does, then that's the way to go. In line with that, I cannot stress enough how important this next piece of advice is, even if you've heard it a million times before. Define what your goals are, a bit longer term, and think about what you need to do to get there. And then do not keep quiet about it. And the reason why I'm saying this is because it has absolutely changed my career trajectory. The people who have supported me, given me advice, believed in me, they have made all the difference. And everyone is so open to helping. So many people want to build other people up, and it's such an amazing thing. So if you believe in something, if you have goals, if you have something to accomplish, shout it out, let people know, because people are going to come together and make that a reality. There is one final question I'm going to answer, and this is almost a little bit of a cultural policy question, which is something I always love talking about, and it is, how can art strengthen local communities? The answer to this question was actually covered extensively in my master's, which was incredibly interesting as it touched on the impact of public art, along with local cultural centers and cultural regeneration. Art brings people together. It's proven that it helps improve mental health and well-being, as well as increases our levels of empathy towards one another. It can educate, uplift, inspire, but it can also be something cathartic and incredibly therapeutic. Or it could just be something beautiful and fun to look at or interact with. There are so many articles and branches of research on this topic, so I will link a few sources in the show notes. I think that this is a good note to wrap up the episode. As usual, thank you so much for listening. And that is it for today on All About Art. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating or a review, as it helps more people discover the show. Also, feel free to share with your friends, or if you share on social media, tag me and get in touch. Thank you so much for listening.